This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Today we are kind of doing our diversity mini-series again, but kind of not. The series kind of just fizzled out. Not anyone's fault, just loads of interviews just all kind of got rescheduled at the same time and we weren't able to get it in on time. But this is one of the conversations that we were going to have as part of that mini-series, so just presume that it's carried on, basically. Today we're going to talk about women in fire safety. Let's jump into the intro and tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk
Blue. What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit subscribe, follow, whatever the button is on whatever platform you are listening / watching on. Rebranding Safety is brought to you by us at Risk Fluent. Risk Fluent is a risk, culture, safety, health, fire safety consultancy, essentially. There's loads of stuff we can do to help you out, whether it's a basic kind of technical health and safety, that traditional kind of get the jobs done stuff, or the more transformational culture change, behavioral, human factors stuff. We love to get involved in that stuff as well. So if you need any help, any support, then check out the website below, riskfluentlimited.com, and we can have a chat and see how we can help. So today we are talking about women in fire safety with two lovely ladies joining us, one by the name of Fiona Perrin and the other by the name of Emily Harrison. I shall let them introduce themselves in a minute, but ultimately we have a great chat about all of the work they're doing to kind of promote diversity within the fire safety sector, and specifically the work that they're doing with the Institution of Fire Engineers and the group, the Institute of Fire Engineers Women in Fire Engineering Networking Group, which is all focused around kind of building that community and that network of getting people in that are a bit more, adding some diversity, like I say, and creating a bit of a safe space and ultimately promoting the career within fire safety as a viable career option for many people out there. So we're going to talk all about that stuff in today's episode. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation with Fiona and Emily. Now, since Zoom have done that update where they make you click it, back in the day, if I had anyone that was nervous, or I wouldn't even say I'm going to press record, I would just press record and let them talk for a little bit and then go, oh, by the way, we've been recording for like 20 minutes. And then it was so good. It was really like, and I know a few podcasters that said they did the same thing to like help people just go, oh shit, okay, this is not that bad. Now, thanks to Zoom, we can't do that anymore, which is annoying. My tactic is ruined, but
damn privacy laws.
I know, right? Terrible. It's like data security gone mad, eh? They should have learned from us in safety.
Yeah. Conkers bonkers.
I know, right? Welcome to the podcast, both of you. Thank you very much for coming on.
Excited to be here. Yeah.
Do you want to introduce yourselves, and then we'll get into a general chit chat about women in fire safety, which I think will be interesting. Who wants to go first?
Are you nodding at me, Emily?
Yeah, go on. You go first.
So my name's Fiona. I'm the health, safety, and fire manager at the Royal Academy of Arts in London. I have almost 20 years experience in safety, and probably, you know, so close to sort of 10 in sort of fire safety, as well as safety, and have recently qualified as a fire engineer.
Nice.
You know, for the last 10 years I've been building up my sort of safety knowledge into but now becoming an engineer, which is exciting. And yeah, I met Emily through our Women in Fire Engineering group that we've been running for the last year.
Awesome.
Cool. I'm Emily Harrison. I am Group Fire Safety Manager at Unite Students. I've done a number of years in fire safety. My previous roles were sort of fire safety manager roles. And then previous to that, I was an inspecting officer. So yeah, varied sort of background there as well. Not quite up to the fire engineering that Fiona's got yet, but I'm on my way there. And the group is certainly supportive of that as well. So yeah, we both sit on the committee for the Women in Fire Engineering Networking Group for the IFE, where Fiona sort of sits as vice president and I'm one of the other committee members.
Awesome. So it's called Women in Fire Engineering. We're going to talk more about that probably later, but just to clarify it, you don't have to be an engineer to be on it. You could be a fire risk assessor as well, or manager that has fire safety within your remit.
Correct. I think they have a tagline, and I'll get in trouble for getting it wrong probably, but it's basically the professional organisation for the fire safety industry.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. There's different levels of membership for different different qualifications and lots of different people from all walks of life and different jobs as well. You know, definitely don't have to be a fire engineer.
Yeah. Awesome. Also, I thought it's good because a lot of people, I'm a member of the IFE as well, and a lot of people think that, oh, you're an engineer. And I'm like, I am the furthest thing from an engineer you are. Like, I can't even remember my date of birth, let alone do some crazy calculations about stuff. No, not a chance. Not a chance. Oh, right. So, I mean, I'm curious just to how did you kind of stump? So, Emily, you were kind of fire service and fire. So, like, fire was early on in your career then, if you're in a fire service, was it, or was it
not really? I used to be a police officer. So prior to that, I was a police officer, and I joined the fire service initially working in community safety. So we would go out and basically to people who are vulnerable within the community, fit them with sort of smoke alarms, offer fire safety advice, that kind of thing. And that's how I came across the fire protection officer role. So I then moved into fire protection, where we're the enforcing authority for that area, and we would go out and audit premises against the Regulatory Reform Fire Safety Order. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I got into fire safety. Really, really great sort of role from my perspective. Probably got a bit bored, if I'm honest, and then moved on into being a fire safety manager. Mm-hmm. So my first role sort of as a fire safety manager was actually with English Heritage. So that was really, really interesting working with sort of historic buildings. So yeah, that's sort of how I then got into it, and then moved on to Unite Students after that. So yeah, very different but great sort of at the same time, and got me into so many different buildings as well as part of that. So yeah.
I think Fiona, did you just kind of get fire naturally from your kind of like me, like had a health and safety career and then all of a sudden fire popped in and you're like, oh, like how did it work for yourself?
Yeah, it, very much like that, actually. Yeah. I spent about 12 years working at the BBC, and for a long time I looked after the international offices. So there was 100 plus offices around the globe, often in more challenging locations. And I would be tasked with the job of going out there. I'd run training, I'd do safety inspections, but also looking at sort of fire risks as well. I'd done the 5-day fire risk assessors course. Brilliant.
As you do.
But it does not prepare you for, you know, even beginning to assess, you know, complicated high rise buildings that are just not built to the same standards whatsoever.
Yeah.
So really realised quite quickly how incompetent I was. So I started off doing a diploma that I think they call the CFPA, diploma in sort of fire protection management, which put me in quite good stead, actually, and was able to really offer a lot more fire safety advice to our officers and work with project management teams when we're making improvements. So instead of just going, I think you're missing a fire detector there, I was able to offer them lots more advice on where they should have them or what sort of fire alarm systems they needed and you know, passive fire protection.
Yeah.
And then started to work more in the UK, working with big sort of production companies and big shows and stuff, and again I sort of started to realize actually I'm starting to make a lot of judgment calls, and I felt like although I had a lot of knowledge, I still wasn't comfortable in myself. Of course, after Grenfell, a lot of questions were being asked around the competence of fire professionals, and felt that I wanted to, you know, extend that knowledge further. And there's not a great deal of courses out there actually for people looking to A, work part-time around a family, and, you know, while studying. So I picked fire engineering without really understanding fully. I'm like, yeah, we use fire engineers all the time. Yeah, they're super knowledgeable. And it was a bit of a shock to the system doing you know, the full on maths and everything after so long. But it was great. I really enjoyed it, made some, you know, wonderful contacts, learned some amazing things. And now, you know, I still work in health and safety, but with fire as well, and for a beautiful historic building, but I'm able to use those skills like to such, an advanced sort of level now. I don't know, I'm slowly starting to feel like I'm competent to do my job.
Chipping away at the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
We're all there, definitely.
I think you touch on the reason you took it exactly kind of where I wanted to go with it, Fiona, so well done with that. Because I struggle with, like, I feel like it's a specialism, fire safety. I feel like maybe real low risk buildings. Like if I had, I had a client ring up the other day and was like, I knew him from outside anyway. And he was like, oh, James, can I get some advice on how to pick a fire risk assessor? And I was like, well, I can do it for you. But if you want to go to someone else, then, you know, the NFCC have done some stuff. And he was like, but my boss kind of wants me to do it, And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Tell me about your operations. And if he'd have turned around and said it was, you know, reasonably low risk, it was just like, I don't know, a series of maybe little shops or something where in and out, whatever. I might have been like, yeah, cool. But like started explaining, it was like, oh, we do welding over here, then we do a different type of welding over here, and we've got explosive atmospheres over here, and that's a disease. And I'm like, mate, no. No, I don't, like, just don't do it. Okay. Like if you're not sure, you need, and it's a no, 100%. And then in my experience was like NHS and housing, like no way would we, like, same as you, Fiona, like did that kind of 5-day course in fire risk assessing and went into the NHS and was like, yeah, I can do fire assessors. Yep, fine. I've done them in like a little factory. I can do fire assessments. And they were like, just going to send you with our like little fire guru for like a couple of weeks, James, to see how it goes. Went to like one hospital in Lincolnshire and was like, and then I literally just shadowed him and another guy, which if it wasn't for those two, I could have never done the fire assessments that I do now. So like, I've literally got my career to thank for those two.
I mean, you know, the three pillars of competence, you're right, it's experience is a big one, because there's so much you don't learn, you know, in the books, on those courses, so to speak. You're absolutely right.
I was even ringing them yesterday. I went to do a job of like a really, really old factory, and it's been around forever, crammed loads of machines into there. And I'd got there and they were like, oh, no, we don't have any detection. And I was like, OK, I kind of get that, because the machines would be setting it off all day long. So I kind of get that. But then they were like, they're telling me about this fire. And I was like, so your alarms did go off. But how did your alarms go off if it was out of hours? No one knew. How did you? And they were like, oh, the sprinklers set it off. And I've been doing fire assessments for a long time and I'd never come across that. So immediately I'm texting my old mentor and I'm like, dude, is this a thing? Like, can this actually? And he's like, yeah, I'll talk to you later. And like rang me the next day and I'd been and done the site and I'd seen it obviously. And I was just like, I've got a complicated one here, mate. Like the means of escape from the top floor literally goes into a hazard room and like then it goes back out into like a protected staircase, and then they've got central wooden stairs, and I'm like, it's a rabbit's warren, but like I can't tell them to like build new staircase. It's like it's a terrace block with a factory in the middle of it that's been around since the friggin' 1800s probably. But what I do, and he's like, you write in the description, you just say it's an old building. This is when it was built. And even now, and I've been doing it many years now, he is still that, that font level of experience. And you're right, it is so powerful. But the reason why I wanted to talk about that was because when I think about, if I'm trying to say to, so like a young woman, to say, why don't you consider a career in fire safety? Not only have we got the normal difficulties that you might assume that it's like a male-dominated profession, which it is, and we'll talk about that in a minute as well. We've got weird issues like, okay, fine, I'll do that. What qualifications should I get? That's a really good question. Like, it's really hard to get into fire safety, I find. Like, just from, unless maybe you've had a long career in the fire service first. I don't know, like the engineering route is interesting, but I think that's a big issue, is just general in routes, qualification-wise. I think we've got a bit of an issue there.
Because there is a degree in fire safety management now, I think.
Is that recent?
She might, know more about this. So there are avenues. There's, you know, the diploma I did as well for fire safety management. So there are options that aren't too sort of engineering, but yeah, it's not straightforward. I mean, the amount of people that we see that have kind of fire as their second or third or fourth kind of career, you know, it's really, really common. So you read the sort of ex-fire and rescue, or you've come from, you know, other avenues, maybe safety or construction, you know, building, surveying, or you know, on the tools, through and up.
I mean, definitely I started with doing the level four diploma, so I completed the level four diploma when I was working for fire and rescue service, and that's the sort of the answer at the moment. That's certainly what's, you know, the outcome of the Grenfell inquiry, and all of that kind of thing.
That's quite new, is it, that one, Emily?
I did it, what, 2017, 2018, something like that.
Okay, so it's not that
yeah, it must have been back then at some point, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been around for a while, from my understanding. But, yeah, so I did the level four diploma, and then most recently I've just completed my level five diploma in fire engineering design, which is sort of my entryway into fire engineering and going and studying that at degree level. So very much I've sort of gone through that route of working my way up. But for a lot of people, they can't just go in and do the diploma, they have to go and do the level three prior. I was really lucky with the fire and rescue service I was at. They kind of had an understanding with the provider that they would provide us with a level of training to be able to start at level four. So that was quite good from there. But I certainly found that the modules that you do as part of the level four diploma were really, really useful. And I use that, I work with health and safety professionals as well who have fire as an extra arm and have done in my previous role. And I definitely feel that sort of level four feels about right as to select the modules of it, feels about right for a health and safety professional to have that extra arm.
Okay.
And then obviously that's been further confirmed with the IFE coming out with sort of elements and the NFCC around inspecting officers and where they need to be at, as sort of further confirms that. But that route for me was sort of great. And I think just going back to what you were previously talking about, James, one of the key things around when you were talking about, you know, when you come across those places where you just go, oh my goodness, I've not come across this before.
Yeah.
One of the great things I think about the group that we've got and the networking group is that if you don't know the answer, you know somebody who does. Yeah. Or you can contact somebody who does. And I think, to me, that's what makes a really, really good fire safety professional, is that you're aware of your limitations. You need to know the limitations of your knowledge, the limitations of your ability, and don't act outside of those limitations.
Yeah.
And it's not a weakness at all. You know, some people might see that as a weakness. It's not a weakness at all. It's a strength, if anything, because you're going, do you know what? Hang on. I don't quite know the answer to that, but I will go and find out for you. And then you're coming back with a much more robust answer for them. And I think that's one of the really great things about having the group, is that you're able to do that within sort of that area as well. And the IFE has so many other groups. You know, they have special interest groups on certain topics. They have branches where there's that network as well to offer that. But, certainly get that from the Women in Fire Engineering group as well.
Yeah. I actually, when I came across that building, because it was so old, Alan was number one on my list, who's my old mentor. And then actually, Emily, you were the second on the list because of your history in heritage. So like, anyone that knows what to do with an old building, it's going to be Emily, like 100%.
It was up there. Yeah. But Alan had the answer.
Was it, sorry, Fiona? I can't remember now. Who was in, one of you is in heritage. What, Fiona, was it you?
Well, we're both.
You're both there. Both of you there.
Get off me now, James. You're stripping off me.
I've got myself in a rabbit hole here, haven't I? Throw me a rope, quick. I've ruined it. Anyway, I'll be honest, what I had, I was like, ladies from podcast, one is heritage. And then I was like, I need to link a LinkedIn check. It is the truth I had. That's what I had written in my notes. But luckily, Alan rang, so it was all right. But yeah, it's such an interesting... I'm doing loads of fire assessments at the minute, which is kind of fascinating because I've only been out of it maybe for about a year and a half. I feel like I've forgotten it all. Like I'd gone into some of these weird buildings and I was just like, whoa, you know, God, what is this? What's an L4 again? What's L1 again? Like, and I couldn't remember any of it. So that was kind of interesting. Anyway, let's bring it back to the original point then. Like, is fire safety, let's just straight up ask, is it a career for women?
Oh, most definitely. I think it's growing in terms of the amount of women that are coming into the sector now. I know, Fiona, I don't know if you've got the figures sort of from the IFE in terms of members at the moment, and I'm sure you'll be able to expand on those further. I'll pass over to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's still really low, and I'm sure it's, you know, no surprise to anyone. In fact, I've got some of them in front of me. So the IFE, this was late last year, the figures, over 11,000 members across all of their grades. Only 815 of those were female.
Is it IFE International or just UK? I can't remember.
It is international. The I stands for institution, not... international, but it is an international organization. They have branches overseas as well. So it's, you know, it's a massive difference. So 7% of its members are female. So but when you break that down a little bit more, actually what you can see is there's a massive number of young women coming into the industry. So things like 16% of student members are females, so that's way more than the average. 15% of associate members are females, so again, maybe they're just getting on the rungs. But as you move up to the full member grade with IFE, only 4% are female. So, you know, the higher you get up those rungs, the less females. So we're hoping one of the aims of the group is not only to support and develop the women within the group, but is also to help inspire, you know, females to get into the fire industry. Because I think it is changing. I mean, you've been in safety for a while, James. I remember the safety industry 20 years ago. You know, I would walk into an IOSH branch meeting and there would just be a handful of women. And it's very similar like that now.
Handful of women. You went to a diverse group then, because mine was...
It was the London branch group. And so there was a few, but, you know, often it would be, old white men.
And many still are, in my opinion. But, yeah. I think they've got...
But safety's the same. Often people come into safety as a second career as well. In fact, I trained originally as an occupational therapist.
Okay.
So, you know, it was even a second career for me, and that was 20 years ago. I'm showing my age a little bit, aren't I? But it's, yeah, it is dominant, and it will take almost a generation to sort of change that. But we need... more, not just more females, but more male allies as well, people like yourself, James, to help champion women and kind of, you know, give women a chance in the industry.
I think for me, it's like, I remember it was February before COVID, which feels like a millennia ago now, but what was that, 20, when did this all start? 20, not
so just 2 years ago, 2020.
2020. Oh God. I knew, I was like 2018, 20. That's how long ago it feels. And I remember a prominent person from one of the biggest professional memberships for safety was like, 70% of the profession is going to retire in like the next 10 years or something like that. I can't remember. And I remember just thinking, wow, like, I mean, are we, do we not want to talk about that? Like, seriously, like, they're just going to disappear and we're left to pick up the pieces. Like, what? We really need to talk about that. And it wasn't so long after that that I read the book Rebel Ideas, which anyone that's listened to my podcast for a long time would be like, oh, here he fucking goes. Because right? I talk about this all the time. But it was that book that got me like addicted to like increasing diversity and at least shouting as much as I can from the podcast about it, because it was just mind blowing that this concept of like cognitive diversity, or more commonly people call it diversity of thought, which I just think like phenomenal. And I got a real realization as to what that actually looks like when my wife was pregnant. I've done maternity risk assessments for years, right, before Sherry was pregnant. And the little minutiae that I learned from just having a good relationship with my wife and seeing what she was dealing with and her talking to me, I was like, you know what? I've never ever thought of like how many times that woman needs to go for a wee. Like, and like that, that's something we need to have a conversation about. Like, you're going to need to go for a wee, like a lot. Like, are you like in the right place? How can I help you? Blah, blah, blah. And just silly little things like that, that I was just like, wow. Like, if my wife wasn't, well, she was really lucky we had COVID. So like, in a way it was kind of helpful to us because she just worked from home for the whole time. And that was amazing for her. But I remember sitting there thinking, Jesus, imagine if you had to go to the office, like, look how exhausted you are. And then that made me think about all of the maternity risk assessments I'd done, and maybe, not maybe, definitely been very naive to that experience. And that just solidified that cognitive diversity for me. Just
being a mother of a young child myself, I've got many, many stories about that. But just, you know, being able to, you're right, ask the right questions, or being that little bit flexible. I was actually chatting to my boss about this exact thing just today. You know, we talk about flexible working a lot now, but in most people's minds, that's just working from home. But yet, actually, it's so much more than that. It's about flexi time around whether it's nursery or school pickups. I don't actually work full time because I've got a primary aged son. And although slightly reluctant to sort of agree to a slightly reduced or flexible working arrangement for me, he's now seen the benefits of that, you know. And, you know, even today he was saying, you know, I'm just glad, you know, the work is getting done, in sort of his words. Yeah. And it is so important to kind of think outside that sort of traditional sort of 9-to-5 job, whether it's a mum or you know, someone with caring responsibilities, or someone you know, with a disability. Yeah. You know, if we can support them in the workplace, make, you know, slight, well, reasonable adjustments, the workplace is going to benefit, you know, significantly from that.
Most definitely. And I think the amount of diversity in roles within the fire sector actually means that is offered in so many different ways within the fire sector. One of my reasons for leaving being a police officer was work-life balance. I used to get one day off with my other half every 3.5 weeks on average. And after weighing up a lot of things, that's kind of what made one of the reasons that I left. As well as other things where they were quite in the past at that point. I've actually seen that the service I was working for has come on significantly since. But I think the fire sector is a lot further forward in a lot of that.
Oh, really?
Particularly because there's a shortage of skill set, I would say, probably has forced people to adapt. So I know a lot of people who will work maybe 2 days a week because they don't need to work anymore, because there's such a skill set shortage at the moment within fire. So actually, you're automatically getting that flexibility, that ability to be able to work part time. You've got a diversity of job roles as well, from like fire safety advisors, fire safety managers, fire safety inspecting officers. there's ranks going in within fire and rescue services now within their protection departments, so that people have progression pathways. That's been looked at a little bit more from what I understand more recently. You've got fire engineers, like Fiona said, you know, and there's progression pathways for them. I was just speaking to a colleague the other day who's been promoted. And I think there are so many career pathways that are expanding at the moment, which I think is such a great thing for attracting more diversity to the industry. And that's what we want to shout about, really, is that, you know, this really is a job that anybody can do, because whatever you want out of that role, you can do it within the fire industry. Just look into all of these different types of roles that you have, that there is something for everybody. And I've just talked about a handful there. There are so many more. And I think that's the great thing. And that's the really attractive thing that I find about the fire industry, that it's given me, coming from a police background, I probably went into that career more so because I like to sort of switch tasks quite quickly. So I like to be doing a lot of different things. Yeah. And so I go into a department and go, a bit bored with this, I'll go and do something else. A bit bored with this, go and do something else. And what I find is that fire gives me that. So I can be dealing with fire risk assessments 1 minute. I can be dealing with giving somebody advice another minute. I can be dealing with building regulations another minute. You know, there's so many different things. And I think people almost, you don't see that until you're in it. You don't see how great it is until you're in it, most right. definitely. But that's my monologue anyway.
I think that's spot on. Like even just within fire risk assessment, you're starting to see people specialize within, or we just do fire risk assessments in the care sector, or yes. you know, we're specialists in the housing sector, or even if you brought them together and have like sleeping risk, or yeah, we only do fire assessments specializing in manufacturing of explosive atmospheres. So, you know, or you're a generalist and do them all. It's fascinating to see. And then you're right, within the job, 1 minute, I was literally doing a fire assessment today, and 1 minute you're talking to guiding them on like human behavior and how people react when you do an alarm and best way to do drills and stuff like that. And then the next minute you're going through the building regs, growing gray hairs and going, right, what purpose group is this? And this is that. And then, right, we're in, is it B or is it E or is it F or is it G? And then your brain hurts. You think, oh, screw this, I'm just going somewhere else. But yeah, it is such a fascinating, I find most safety is like that actually, but fire safety particularly is when I was in housing, my role was like kind of like yours there, Emily, that you described, and that 1 minute I'm in a design meeting for a block of flats we're building, which was, I really enjoyed doing that. Next minute we're kind of fire risk assessing, which turned out to be a snagging list, unfortunately, most of the time, for a block of flats we've just built. And then you're in a little mini care home or something. It's a fascinating little career. It really is. Interesting point in those stats, Fiona. Like it seems to be getting a bit more attractive for the younger side. Do you think there's any particular reason for that? Like, or also, is there more that we could or should be doing there? I suspect yes is the answer to that bit. But
is it more attractive? Maybe just people are becoming, you know, more aware of it as a career choice. And there's definitely more we can be doing to support that. But we also need to support the women in the industry in progressing. So the numbers over the last 5 years of those student and graduate and associate levels have grown significantly, but those next levels up still aren't growing, or as much, shall I say.
Yeah.
So one of the things our support group have done is things like support and mentoring to progress to member grade for our support network. We've also done one for IENG application. I went to my IENG application very recently, and I had to trawl through my contacts on LinkedIn to find incorporated engineers or Chatham engineers to be my referees, because I just didn't have any. So being able to also offer mentors in more senior positions for females, and we've had a overwhelming amount, really pleasantly, of both females and males willing to support females, kind of move up those rungs as well.
Awesome.
So it's encouraging younger generation to get into fire safety, but also then supporting the ones that are here and keeping us in the industry as well. So breaking down some of those barriers, so you know we don't end up leaving when things get tough.
Mm.
Addressing those natural sort of naturally, I guess, female associated traits as well, in the fact that one thing that you've just said around, you know, people jumping up to that next rung with the IFE and that kind of thing. I remember watching a program with Karen Brady, where she was saying how females naturally won't go and ask for a pay rise, or they won't think to go for that promotion. You know, a woman will look at a job description, and if they don't meet 100% of it, they won't apply. A man may look at the job description and yeah. and if they've got 75% will most likely apply, is the theory behind the data and the research that's been done. And I think that's potentially what we're seeing in those member figures, is that actually, you know, great, we're getting women coming into the industry, you know, maybe that attraction is there, and trying to get that out more. Of course, we want to get that out more, but actually, let's make sure we nurture those who are coming into the industry and make sure that they know their worth, and that actually that we go, yeah, you can do it. Look, I did it. Look, this person did it. And you can do that too. And it's providing them with the tool set, I guess, to do that as well, which is why we run the workshops. We've got more workshops coming as well. We're going to be running one on EngTech applications moving forward as well. So, yeah, it's that I guess, is what we're coming across as well, isn't it?
I was just going to say, I've been reading this book recently, James, if you want a book recommendation. Sheryl Sandberg, she worked for Google in the early days, and then was like the CEO, I think, of Facebook. And she talks a lot about what Emily's just saying, about all the reasons why women aren't progressing in the workplace. Mm. And there's the sort of the obvious ones that women tend to sort of you know, end up working part-time and move out of high-powered careers. But actually, it's all these other hidden ones that women are more likely to suffer imposter syndrome. They're more likely to sit back and be asked to kind of take that next step, where men are the ones stepping forwards and volunteering for things, you know, asking for pay rises, you know, jumping at every opportunity, where women need to be helped and mentored and you know, fostered a little bit more in work situations. So really, really good book. Lean In.
Do you think employers need to do better at supporting that? Like, or being aware of it, at least? Like, I'm just thinking, like, now running a company, like, and I'd like, you know, I aspire for us to employ people. And I think, like, would that naturally just be something that I could just become quite blind to unless I knew about it and was really proactive with it? Or, yeah, would it be something maybe that changes over time?
We naturally, you know, recruit in our own image.
Yes.
And, you know, there's lots of these sort of statistics, and Sandberg quotes quite a few of them. Even like primary school teachers tend to ask, if you know, they ask kids to raise their hand to answer a question, they're more likely to pick the little boys to answer the questions than the little girls. And it's so ingrained. Yeah, there's lots and lots of research about this. Another example was where they had a story, I can't remember it all, but all they did was change the name of the main antagonist, and got a whole heap of people to report back what they felt about this person. And of course, they felt worse or more negative thoughts around this scenario when the character's name was a female name versus a male name. So just knowing that there are biases actually is the first step. and then, you know, helping to actively overcome them. I've seen a few good ones recently in terms of jobs, something quite close to my heart, but actually advertising that you're open to not just work from home, but full, whether it's flexible working, part-time options, you know, making that really clear. And I think you'll find you'll get more really great female candidates applying.
Most definitely. We've done some recruitment recently, and as part of the job descriptions, I was really careful around what we put in the job descriptions to make sure that we were being open to as many people as we could be, because there is the flexibility within those roles. So let's shout about it as an organisation. I mean, the recruitment team was super open to that, which was great. And I think that's a really great thing when you sort of can do that within an organisation. Most definitely, yeah.
It's interesting. I was before I went self-employed, we were about to go on a little bit of a recruitment drive, and I had a few conversations within Project Meletium about like my own biases. Like I know what I'm like. I would have just employed mostly like quite young, energetic people. But I kind of know that actually one of the roles I want someone that's really analytical and really technical, whereas I'm not like that. I'm real kind of like behavioral, cultural, that the social side of things is what I love. And then I kind of get a bit bored if I do too much of that technical stuff. And I was like, right, so I need a technical stuff, but I'm fully aware of my bias. If I get somebody, let's say slightly older, come for an interview, I know I'll be really harsh on them. Like I remember having conversations with, because I would just assume that they're just the same old, you know, old safety professional that'll be stuck in the mud. And I remember talking to the group at PM, and there was a couple of the older professionals in the room, and I was like, I want to get lynched here saying this. Like, you know, it's interesting that they then turned around and said that they had a bias previously before they had been like coached through it to younger people, and that they assumed that younger people were, you know, stupid, didn't know anything, and need loads of coaching. Like, we're full of this stuff all over the place. And it is fascinating when you really start to address it and just say, look, I just want someone else in the room or someone to proof this for me. And I think that's really powerful, really powerful.
Yeah, most definitely. Even just on what I just said then around flexible working, you know, we were talking about women then. That's, you know, something that men want too, you know, roles. We're not in the 1950s. All of the things that we've talked about, you know, affect men in just the same way. You know, roles are very different to what they were, you know, 50 odd years ago. And I think that's so important as well, because it wouldn't surprise me if actually a lot of these things, you know, men are going through similar challenges. You know, they want to have all of these things that also women, I guess, years ago, you know, have wanted to have. But yeah, it's not just a female thing. I think it affects so many of us. And it probably leading on to sort of next point potentially around diversity of thought. That diversity of thought and diversity within the team, I just think is so valuable. And acknowledging that when somebody challenges something within a meeting or challenges something that somebody says or asks a question, it's not that they think you're doing something wrong. That's not, your ego doesn't need to get bruised by that. It excites me when people do that, because I think, yes, we can be better. We're actually going to have a more robust solution to this. And I think that's a difficult thing in itself, particularly when you're working within a specialism. You kind of feel not only like you've got to know everything or know where to get that from, but that, you know, you're responsible for that. You know, you're leading on fire safety, or you're the fire safety person, so you should know it all. Actually, do you know what? One of the ops managers might know the answer to that, or do you know what? One of our health and safety managers may know the answer to that. Or, you know what? A director might even know the answer to that. And that's why it's so important to get the culture of fire safety within the organisation, but also that diversity within your meetings, within whatever you're doing. Because to me, that's just how you get the right solutions and the most robust solutions and the safest ones too.
Yeah.
If you're only hiring, you know, yeah, in your own image, you're only ever going to get that one solution, aren't you?
Exactly.
Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
I would just hate to have a team of Jameses. Like, I would argue with myself. What a horrible team that would be.
Me too.
It's interesting, actually, as you, there was something you said earlier, Emily, that made me write something down when you were kind of talking about the kind of risk taking in applying for jobs. So I've heard that stat as well, that females are more likely to only apply to a job that they 100% are for, whereas but ultimately I'm one of those statistics as a man that I would 100% apply for a job but I haven't got everything for. Hey, I never know. So that's really interesting. But then it made me think about something, right? We do fire risk assessments typically as one person talking with the ops people. Now you get some form of cognitive diversity from the ops, from whoever you're talking to on site, 100%. But then made me think, like, we're going to employ like a big team of fire risk assessors, right? And we're going to get loads of cognitive diversity, and then we're going to send you out on your own to do a fire assessment with zero cognitive diversity. And I don't know if that's a problem or not, because cost-wise, to send two fully qualified fire risk assessors to do one job, you know, I can hear my own budget screaming, let alone anyone else's. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
From being in a job where often you are just the sole safety person or the sole fire person going out, quite often, that's where you, I suppose, rely on your debriefs, your internal team meetings, internal CPD sessions, where you can share, perhaps, oh, I did this risk assessment the other day. Can we talk about that and present back and learn off each other in a slightly different way? So you're not doubling up on costs and sending loads of people out, but you might have mentoring or shadowing opportunities, other things that you can build in to be able to learn off each other, I think, is how you would do it. I know we were quite a big team of safety people at the BBC, and we would have, monthly, get together CPD sessions where a different person would present on their sort of speciality and kind of learn that way.
I think that's why your network is so important, though, as well, internally and externally. So it's recognising what your network internally gives you and what your network externally gives you and how you're growing as a result of that. And I think that's why that's so important. Like, for me, I mean, as part of my role currently, I don't actually do fire risk assessments like that in terms of as part of that. However, for me, it's really, really important that I've got that skill set within what I do, because I do need it on a day-to-day basis, because we are doing it on a dynamic basis with fire safety management. And I think I'm very, very conscious of comparing myself to other people within the industry and who else is doing a similar role, what qualifications have they got and things like that. But which can be an unhealthy thing as much as a healthy thing, don't get me wrong. But I do think that's really, really important to make sure you've got a network internally and externally to check that knowledge and check that ability. Because I think it's really, really easy to become quite insular within a role. And that's then, I guess, the danger, because you are going and seeing, particularly if you get the same risk assessor, year in, year out, going to the same property and they work for that company as well. Then you become blind to those hazards, don't you? Because you've seen that something is in a certain place every single time. And maybe the first time you sort of went, oh, well, actually, I know so-and-so is going to move that in a minute because I've asked them to do it, so it doesn't matter. But actually then the next time you go back and it's still there, no, they haven't, right? Okay, we need to deal with that. But you're becoming blind to those things, aren't you? So it is that network is so key. And again, linking back to how we know each other, the Women in Fire Engineering network is so, so key to that for me. I've got links within that network. I've got links within elsewhere within the IFE. I've got other people who do similar roles within the housing sector, within the student accommodation sector, who I regularly catch up with. And that's part of my working day as well as my evenings, to make sure that I'm doing my best so I can go to work and for Unite and I can go, I know that I'm taking in all of this and that this is the best thing for Unite to do. And I think that's a lot of like personal responsibility, but actually linking back again to another point earlier on, that was from what Fiona was saying around the figures, that's what we need to build in women. Because actually, if we've got women that aren't applying for the next run lot because of whatever, that actually are need those sort of nurturing people around them that maybe haven't got access to them, we need to help them build those networks. We need to help them to achieve what sort of, I mean, I'm not saying I'm be all and end all, but to achieve these networks and things like that, because they are so valuable. My networks means everything. If I didn't have it, God, I'd be awful, in my opinion. But yeah. That's
another recruiting study that Sandberg quotes.
Are you getting commission in that book, Fiona?
I know. I am. It's because I'm mid-reading it.
You're like me with fine. Rebel Ideas. Like, honestly, I'm expecting Matthew Syed to ring me up and offer shares.
Maybe we should swap books and then have a chat just about that. But she talks about when people are the difference between recruiting men and women. Men are often recruited taking a chance in them. They're kind of being recruited for the package and what they can kind of offer, and offering them that next step up. But when women are recruited, they're often recruited on their experience and their ability to prove that they've done the job before, which is crazy, because if you are going up for that next step up the rung, it can be really difficult. Find yourself a mentor as well is another piece of advice Emily touched on. I think it's, you know, that's really important for females in particular, but men as well. I think everyone can benefit from having a mentor.
100%. Yeah, I'd agree on that. I think interestingly is some that what you were kind of talking about, like that network, Emily, and like the relationship that you two have as well, is like just really nice. Well, I remember when I first joined both IOSH and IFE, it felt quite clicky to me, and it felt quite, I would say IFE more so, felt quite intimidating as quite a young person. In fire safety, it was always, whenever I was in a call or a meeting with IFE, it was always like, "Oh, are you new here?" And I'm like, "Bitch, I'm fire assessing general hospitals. No, I'm not new here. Thank you very much." And it was always, I don't know, and maybe that's just a legacy thing, or maybe that was my own interpretation, but the way you talk about it doesn't sound like that at all now.
Well, I think that's the whole reason why. So it was Andrea White that created the group. It's her brainchild, but it was absolutely for that reason that it's a little bit of an old boys club, and she wanted to create a safe space for females to support each other, to share knowledge, to inspire, and kind of, yeah. It's only been going a year, and it's brilliant. We've already got almost 400 members on the LinkedIn group, and it's not exclusively for women, but it is there to support women. You know, when we get that 7% up to 50%, then we'll take off the women title. But you know, we welcome male allies as well.
I think it's brought people out of the woodwork as well, most definitely. We regularly see on the page, as well as people just engaging with the group, that there are so many men, you know, who work within the IFE, who work within the industry, who are, as soon as this happened, are fully embracing it. And I think that's the thing, when you have an industry which has got sort of that reputation, that you kind of tar everybody with the same brush. Yeah. And you know what? Maybe 50% of the people in that room are not that, maybe 75% aren't. Yeah. Maybe it's just actually the one person that you spoke to, but those other people just haven't been put in that position. And then as soon as we, you know, this has been created, it's almost grown arms and legs, and we do have so much support from senior people within the IFE as well, you know, commenting on topics that have been discussed or the things that are coming up, and they've just embraced it so much, which I think has almost made it more amazing, and given me as well, you know, sitting on the committee, that real oomph to go, do you know what, this is the right thing, and the IFE want to do the right thing for the right reasons, and that's what's made it great, really,
at a time as well where being in a fire engineer or a fire risk assessor is it's been quite scary for like the last, oh God, how many years since Grenfell? No, like 8 years or something, is it? Something? Like, so, you know, I remember just being in my own experience through that was like, okay, I knew how serious this job was, but seeing that was just like really, really quite scary. So having that network, I think just for that reason, is that little, I always see it like a little comfort blanket. Like I know that I can go to PM, for example, on one of our calls, or I can, you know, I'm really lucky to have a real awesome network of people on LinkedIn. I'll put a post out or message some people or whatever. And I do find most people are really receptive. And interestingly, it's like I think I'm guilty of tarring a lot of people, particularly organizations, with the same brush. If I have one or two bad experiences, I'm like, nah, screw you, I'm off. But it's kind of like, I was talking to my barber actually the other day, like negative stuff is always more prominent than the positive stuff, isn't it? So there's those positive people in the woodwork, or they're not even in the woodwork, they're right in front of you, but you just maybe assume what I did, assume that they were just part of the same old clique when actually they're not.
And I think we can think outside of the IFE as well when we talk about, you know, support for women. You know, companies like the IFSM, and of course the Women in Safety Awards. So do a shout out for Chloe and Kate and the amazing work they've done. So they ran their first award ceremony for women in the fire sector just last year, and already it's grown. It's you know, spiraled to, it will be an amazing event this year to have recognition for women in the industry, which I think is a great thing.
Awesome.
So there's a lot of work going on in lots of organisations to kind of help, you know, the gender imbalance, which is, yeah, it's a really good time to be involved, really.
Mm. Yeah. And you're seeing more of it, which I think is really important, isn't it? Like, I'm seeing loads of it now, which is great. Like, there's loads of women that are women and winning awards, or they're just being prominent on LinkedIn or other social media, that I work in safety or I work in fire safety or come to this group and that one, which just never happened like 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Never happened. So yeah, that's really good to see, I think, just to be able to see it, particularly as a student or a young kind of woman, or even any kind of minority group, to be able to see someone that you can relate to. Because I never saw anyone young that I could look at and go, yeah, that's cool. That's someone cool that doesn't look like my granddad and wearing a shirt and a well-ironed shirt and a tie. Like, I wanted to see someone who was wearing scruffs and not, like, you know, all smart and uptight.
yeah, so many times I've worked, you know, rocked up at a job, or a site or something, and you know, had to try and convince them that I was the fire or the safety person coming to check up. But it's changing the mold, isn't it? You know, breaking down those barriers, and it's a good thing.
And I think it's the same within fire and rescue services as well. You know, what they've seen over years and years and years of, you know, you ask a 5-year-old, you know, what gender is a firefighter, they're going to say a man. And the amount of times when I was working in community fire safety that you go out to schools to do a school talk and they go, are you a fireman woman, or something similar, because they're not quite sure. No, you're not a fireman, you can't be, and things like that, where, you know, it's right from when children are very, very young, and, you know, women in the fire service have, you know, do a lot of work around that. You've got some really great leaders, Danny Cotton, certainly when she was running London Fire Brigade, challenged a lot of that, as well as, you know, you've got Alex Johnson up in Yorkshire at the moment, and I notice a lot of the stuff that they're doing around women in fire safety. And I think that's really, really great that it's across the board within the fire sector. So not only have you got that diversity in terms of jobs and the opportunities, but actually the diversity that's being pushed in terms of women is great, because it's across the sector. It's not just us. It's all of these different organisations and groups that are really pushing, you know, and promoting women to join up. And you see it within recruits now, you know, when Fire and Rescue Services are posting, you know, there is a really good mixture coming through, with into fire and rescue services now. And I think that is such a great thing, because how much of a better service can they now provide to the public now that they've got that diversity of thoughts, that diversity just in general, on their books, and how many more people can they keep safe as a result is just great. So yeah, it's exciting.
There's Yorkshire Fire Service are on TikTok. I don't know if you.
I saw, yes.
They're really good.
Definitely,
really
they, good. Are. They are.
And there's an. I'm gonna find this. There's a female firefighter on TikTok as well. I can't remember her name for the life of me, but she just makes loads of videos about being a woman firefighter. And she's great. And I was like, oh, I'll find her name. And then I remembered the second I click on TikTok, it's going to play. I can't do that while it's recording. I will find it. But yes, she's awesome as well. And I think social media is really good. That's like, there's a lot wrong with social media, but ultimately that's what's really good about. I love TikTok. Like, so there's loads of like people that are from an ethnic minority or a gender maybe, or that are in a role that they're not stereotypically maybe meant to be in according to the stereotype. Like, there's a woman that I follow as well who's a bricklayer. There's a woman I follow who's a lorry driver, and they're awesome. Like, they just do awesome content. Mm-hmm. I've just like, this is what it's like to be a lorry driver. And this is what it's like. I use most of these things. I follow a few guys that are lorry drivers as well. Loads of brickies, because I think they're just funny. For me, I use them as a real good insight into like what actually happens at work. Like, when we're not, I think they're great insight. I use it for like training and everything. But I love social media for that. I think it's really good for stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I think people are being almost empowered to be more themselves as well. So social media is so much of a part of our lives that, you know, it's okay to be you. And I love that is spreading into the workplace a lot more now, because I think, again, that encourages that diversity, of thought, you know, speak your mind, say what you're thinking. Just because that might be different to what the boss is thinking doesn't mean it's wrong. It actually means that it's going to be better.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. Definitely.
Yeah. Grand. Right. We've been talking for a while. I think I lost track of the time, if I'm honest. So, that I really enjoyed that. Thank you very much. Do you want to we spoke a lot about the network group, but like, do you just want to give it a kind of shout out, general summary, how to join and how to get involved? So if anyone's listening, male, female, they know where to go and what to do.
Yeah, so the group is primarily on LinkedIn. So you search women in, or IFE, women in fire engineering group. Absolutely no restrictions on anyone joining. You don't have to be an IFE member. All of our events, we've got a CPD session every week, every month this year, a range of different topics, completely free to anyone. Get involved. There are lots of support sessions and mentoring sessions involved as well. So yeah, look us up or feel free to drop me a line. Maybe I'll pop a link to the group underneath this
100%, we will.
Chat on LinkedIn. So
I will put it down below as well. So if anyone listening to this, they're watching it, they can jump on there as well. Anything else you want to shout out to? Is there any other groups or anything? This is your free moment. You can plug anything you like, be it book, be it company, whatever. If there's anything you want to plug, feel free.
Just, you know, don't be scared to, you know, stand up as a woman, shout out yourself, you know, put in, nominate yourself for the Women in Fire Safety Awards or another woman that you know or work with, and support each other. You know, I think we can really achieve a lot when we support each other.
Wow. No pressure, Emily, but that was pretty good from Fiona. I don't know if you want to end it on anything better.
I probably can't, to be fair. I thought the really nice thing about what she said, though, was, you know, going through COVID and everything, I don't know if you guys have felt it too, but I think the world has changed to not necessarily the better with a lot of people. So I think the kinder we can be to each other and the more we can help each other, it's got to be a good thing, hasn't it? So, yeah.
Excellent.
Everything she said.
Yeah. Love that. What a lovely way to end that. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that conversation. I always quite like those little group conversations. There's loads more that we've got coming in the future around that style, but ultimately I like the one-to-ones as well. I pretty much just like every conversation we have on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got some more out of it. And if you know somebody that is from a minority group or the different gender or so on, typically is of the same race and the same gender in fire safety, so that's what we're trying to promote here. So if you know somebody who is not of those two groups in that kind of massive majority, then maybe share this podcast with them and kind of use it as a motivational point or even just a discussion starter to say, what about fire safety as a career? There's the engineering route, there's the kind of management route, fire risk assessor. You know, it's an interesting career. I love the fire safety work that we do at Risk Fluent, and I have loved fire safety for a long time. So yeah, share this with somebody who's maybe looking for a new career or they're about to start kind of going into their career, maybe even just thinking about what to do at university. This might be a really good podcast for them to listen to. Otherwise, thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out riskfluentlimited.com. Everything for our consultancy is on there. And eventually what I'm going to start doing is bringing all the rebranded safety stuff over from there onto the Risk Fluent now that Risk Fluent is all up and running. But otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.